This is Monitor Midway in its 39th hour. This is Don Russell in Radio Central New York. And in a moment, we check television for the soundtrack of the American Forum of the Air. First, though, we check up on an American from Davenport, Iowa, who made sports history today. If you were with Monitor 90 minutes ago, you heard the thrilling finish of the National Open playoff where a comparatively unknown golfer leaped to fame by defeating one of the very greatest, Ben Hogan. Jack Fleck is the new champion's name. He took the playoff with a 1-under par 69 against Ben Hogan 72. And how does a man feel in a moment of triumph? Here is how Monitor heard Jack Fleck tonight.
Thank you. It's a great pleasure. I'm lost for words. I don't know what to say. It's been a great tournament, of course, but it's hard to realize that I am now the champion. The Lord was with me, I think, because, I don't know. It seems like something was just driving me all the way. I've never played this well before, and here, out of nowhere, I started to play real well. It's hard to explain.
I should say you certainly did play well. Do you have anything here now, Harry?
I was just wondering if perhaps Jack might like to say just a word to that little family who's back there in Davenport.
Hi, Lynn. Hi, Craig. How's everybody back there?
Well, how do you think they are?
I'll tell you, I believe the town will be flooded tonight.
Yes, it will.
It's going to go from 300 to 400 real quick.
Okay, thank you very much, Jack Fleck.
Let him rant.
The new champion, ladies and gentlemen.
And what a wonderful one, huh, Lawson?
Harry Von Zell and Lawson Little interviewing the new National Open champion, Iowa's Jack Fleck, as Monitor checks a moment of triumph. And here's a bulletin from San Francisco. Ben Hogan, his voice cracking, has just announced his retirement from competitive golf. Monitor salutes the champion from Texas. Now, we check the American Forum of the Air. Tonight on the American Forum of the Air, you'll hear Senator Chet Holifield, Democrat from California, and joint member of the Joint Committee on Atomic Defense. Representative Claire Huffman, Republican of Michigan, and member of the House Education of Labor Committee, and Val Peterson, the administrator of the Federal Civil Defense Administration. The moderator of the American Forum, Stephen McCormick. Now, here is the American Forum of the Air in a discussion of Will You Survive in a Nuclear War?
This week, President Eisenhower, the cabinet, and thousands of government employees left Washington for 3 days in a mammoth civil defense evacuation project to see if the federal government could be operated from locations many miles from the nation's capital. And throughout the nation, drills and tests were held in many cities. This activity, plus new talk of the A-bomb, the H-bomb, the U-bomb, discussions as to whether we should or should not evacuate cities in case of attack, all of these have focused on the question of survival in a nuclear war. Our guests today, experts in their fields, are much concerned with this discussion. Well, gentlemen, let's start here. Will you survive in a nuclear war is a question that applies to everyone. Let's begin. Are we preparing in the right way, in your opinion? Is civil defense as it is today the right answer? I'd like to hear opinions from all three of you. First, Congressman Holifield.
In my opinion, if nuclear attacks should hit the 50 industrial centers of the United States today, we would incur casualties that would run into 30 or 40 million people. I say that the United States is totally unprepared for a nuclear attack today due to the lack of initiative on the part of the leadership of our nation in planning and financing a program.
Well, Congressman Hoffman, your opinion on that?
Well, if we're to believe the things, all of the things that the experts have been telling us about the power of some of these new weapons, it would occur to me that there isn't any use, I'd say to my friend Holifield, there isn't any use. We're all going to be wiped out anyway in a fraction of a second.
You don't feel there's any use at all, then?
Well, I said if we are to accept at its face value all of these predictions about the power of these weapons and added to that, if we are to accept that Russia or the Chinese or someone is going to use them on us, we're through right now. If I believed all that, I'd throw up my hands and say, hang me somewhere.
Well, Governor Peterson, I know your position isn't in along the lines of the two congressmen. How do you feel about it?
Well, I think that while these weapons are terrible in their devastating characteristics, and while the attack would bring some tremendous problems for the United States, there are things that we can do to permit us to survive if we're serious about preparing ourselves to survive. In other words, if you survive will depend upon what you do. There are things you can do right this moment. You don't need to wait for the government. You don't need to wait for anyone. And there are things that it is required that your government do for you, both at the federal level, the state level, the county, and the city level. If all these things are undertaking, there are things we can do. And I point this out to Congressman Hoffman, that if an enemy were to bomb our 70 leading metropolitan complexes, he would bomb 92 cities containing 70 million Americans, but he would destroy just 3% of the real estate of America. There's a lot of America outside of these big cities, and I'd be the last to minimize how important these big cities are to the United States.
Congressman Hollifield, do you have any suggestions as to how we might improve this?
Yes, I certainly do. The federal government has the constitutional responsibility for defending our nation in times of war and in times of peace. They have the responsibility on the military front and on the civilian front. Today, the federal government is not accepting that responsibility. They are shoving it off onto the little cities and villages and the big cities and counties and states. They're refusing to come through and admit the realities of modern H-bomb type of bombing, which transcends city, county, and state boundaries and becomes a federal problem.
Well, now, if it becomes a federal problem, who's going to pay for all this?
The federal government should pay for civilian defense just the same as it pays for military defense. The lives of the nation are at stake, and the continuity of production are at stake. Our liberties and our freedoms are at stake in both instances.
And you wouldn't put any responsibility down at the local level or regional or state?
I would certainly put responsibility at the local level for participation. There's many things they can do at the local level, but the major part of the planning and the major part of the financing must be done by the federal government the same as it is now done in the military field.
Governor Peterson, would this bother you if this sort of thing were put into effect?
Civil defense in the United States, in my judgment, will never work unless this is a shared responsibility at all levels of government. Now, whether you or I live or not will depend in the final analysis upon what you and I do as individuals, because these bombs are going to fall on cities and upon states. They don't fall just on this center of the federal government. Now, I think that we must step up the tempo of civil defense activity on the part of the states, the counties, and the national government. And I think all three of them must step up to meet their responsibilities. As to the financing of it, that's a matter that has to be determined in the legislative bodies involved with such suggestions as come from the executive branch. And I know that Congressman Hollifield knows that the law under which we are presently working was passed by the Congress of the United States in 1950, became effective in 51, and it provides that civil defense is primarily the responsibility of the states and the localities. And I think that law needs to be modified, and I can assure you that there are many people considering possible modifications, and such may be proposed at an appropriate time.
Well, I'm mighty glad to hear that Governor Peterson say that the law needs to be amended. The 1950 Civil Defense Act is just as obsolete as the horse and buggy is in the field of transportation today. And it's up to the federal government to come forward, because they have the responsibility of the executive branch in operating the Federal Civil Defense Administration. It's up to them to come forward and give us some suggestions as to what type of legislation we should have. I admit that it needs changing, just like Governor Peterson. But I say that they should come forward, as they have the responsibility and suggest
how. Let's go over to Congressman Hoffman for a moment here and see what he thinks of all
two,
this. Go ahead.
Listen to these two eminent gentlemen, the governor and the congressman, and everyone would be frightened clear out of their wits. They wouldn't know what to do. They just run around in circles. Now, I agree with Chet that the federal government is charged with the responsibility of protecting this nation. But after all, going clear back to the revolutionary days, they had responsibility, or those in charge. The federal government perhaps wasn't in existence at that time. But who did the fighting? Who furnished the money? Didn't some old fella go up somewhere around Philadelphia and raise the funds? And didn't these fellas in their rags, didn't they do the fighting and all, even Molly Pitcher? These two gentlemen would put everything either on the state or the federal government and ignore the people themselves. Now, I believe in one thing, at least, that Franklin Delano Roosevelt said. You remember, Chet? He said the only thing we need fear is fear itself. Now, these two gentlemen and the rest of them, why, heavens and earth, they have everybody frightened to death, and it goes on the assumption that these weapons will wipe us out overnight and that someone is determined to do it.
Well, who?
Not in the future, but right away, right now.
Who should take over in this situation if we have an attack?
Oh, well, a combination of all three, the federal government, the states, and the people themselves.
The way it's now organized?
Well, I agree with Chet here. I understand he'd have, of course, everyone who wants to protect this country believes that you must have defense, and civilian defense is a part of it, no question about that. But after all, I don't believe in frightening people. Now look, what they're going to do and what they're doing now, they have the people so frightened. that many of them are hiding their heads. I wouldn't be surprised if you took an unannounced census around here to find half the population in Washington someday under the bed, hiding.
Well, Governor Peterson,
I think it might be for some other reason than civil defense requirements, Mr. Congressman. However, I'd like to point this out. I said in the beginning, in my first remark, and I want the Congressman Hoffman to remember or to recall this, I said that there were many things that we could do individually, and many things can be done by no one but the individual. And I don't minimize the responsibility of the individual in these matters. But now as to the frightening of the people, so far as that part's concerned, I had nothing to do with inventing an atomic or nuclear bomb. But let me just give you an example, and this is a factual example. This is not done to dramatize or overstate the situation, and Congressman Hollifield is a member of the Joint Committee on Atomic Energy, and I think he can bear me out on this. If you drop a 20-million-ton bomb on Washington, and I assume that that size bomb would be used by the day that an enemy saw fit to start a war, you would create a radius of total destruction of 5 miles. Now, that means that you fractionalize, pulverize, vaporize everything within that radius of 5 miles. That's a diameter of 10 miles. You have a second ring of heavy destruction of 5 miles, a third one of moderate of 5 miles, and a fourth one of light damage of 5 miles. Now, that's a diameter of 40 miles of destruction. But within that area of total destruction, you have a crater created that will be some 200 feet deep and a mile and a half across. And you have everything that's in that area either fried or pulverized or both simultaneously, and the heat in that area is 13,530 degrees Fahrenheit, and water boils at 212. Now, we're not trying to frighten anybody. We're just trying to tell the people the plain, straight truths of this age in which we live, and it's a grim age, and this is the reason the president said the other day that we better all hope and pray that the conflict of this kind never befalls the United States.
Because I'm not going along with you on the hoping and praying. So
I want to bear witness to the facts which Governor Peterson has given. Last spring, I flew over a hole in the Pacific Ocean where an island had been, and that hole was 165 feet deep and over a mile across. I flew back and forth in a helicopter, and I saw what the last hydrogen bomb test explosion did. And I know if that was transferred to a city, the results would be as Governor Peterson says. Now, we're not trying to scare the American people. I say that the American people are mature. And if you give them the facts and give it to them in a convincing way from a source of unquestioned authority, and I suggest that that source should be the President of the United States talking direct to the people, not once but several times, and explaining to them the effect of these hydrogen weapons. Once they have knowledge from an authoritative source of what this effect is, I believe the American people will do as they have done in the past. When they're faced with danger, they'll take the steps that are necessary to protect themselves and their nation from that danger.
What about a little leadership in Congress, Congressman? Here's an excerpt from the New York Times today. It says, if any atomic disaster ever befell this country, Congress would be in a mighty poor position to demand in congressional investigations. It would first have to investigate itself. Since 1951, Congress has consistently slashed appropriation requests for civil defense since 1951.
Well, let me interrupt there. Chet knows all about that.
Well, why doesn't Congress do something about this?
Can I answer that question?
Yes.
Since 1950, there have been numbers of civil defense bills put in. I have one to make Governor Peterson's department a cabinet-level department because I think it is that important. We have not given to the director of civilian defense, and I'm not speaking of Governor Peterson personally because I have high respect for him, but I'm speaking for other administrators of civilian defense before him, that they have not as yet brought before the Congress a realistic program. And when they do bring a realistic program in tune with the hydrogen bomb danger, I say that then the Congress will wake up and give to them the funds that are necessary to do the job.
Congressman Hoffman, do you feel you'll vote for some sort of program like that?
Oh, sure. I'm for national defense. I'm for civilian defense. But I'm also for the end of this thing of frightening the people. Now, if the people hear today over the radio the statements of these two gentlemen, why, what are they going to do? You fight them half to death, all right?
You've got to face the facts,
Mr. Sure, you have to face the facts. And let us assume that those holes that you've been telling about can be blown into Washington, into Detroit, or any of these industrial centers. What are you going to do about that? Wait a moment. By running them out of the city like you did the other day, that isn't going to help anybody. And it's just possible that you may yell wolf long enough and often enough so the people won't pay any attention to you. Well, now, unless you do something, I'll do
it. It'll help everyone that gets out of the city and that are absent when that bomb drops.
How many are going to get out and where are they going?
It depends upon our evacuation plans and our program for evacuation.
Wait a minute, Chet. I understand that you're in favor of some plan, either that the National Guard or the Army or some of these people can teach our people down at the grassroots. All right.
I'm in favor of a civil defense administration. Not in a military defense administration in the field of civilian defense. I'm in favor of giving Governor Peterson and his department the prestige that it needs, the funds that it needs, and the leadership from the presidential level to the people of America, because I say the people of America will listen to the president, regardless of whether he's a Republican or a Democrat. They will listen to him, and they will believe, from an authoritative standpoint, his statements on a subject so fraught with our national survival.
Let's ask Governor Peterson now. You've both been talking about the problems that are closely concerned with the governor.
Let me make a little statement now about the status of civil defense in the United States. There are two broad phases to civil defense. There's the post-attack phase and the pre-attack phase. Now, in the post-attack phase, where we have copied our procedures from those of Britain, and the British and the Germans know more about modern civil defense than anybody in the world, in that phase of civil defense, every state in America, most large cities, all large cities in America, and in our territories, do have civil defense in being in various degrees of readiness. Some of them are very fine. However, that's the remedial or mop-up or clean-up phase of civil defense. I am more interested in the pre-attack phase of civil defense, what you can do to save the lives of the millions of people who are resident in these great centers of population. Now, in that phase, there are only two things that we can work with in civil defense. One is evacuation, which simply means putting space between you and the explosion at the time that it occurs. The other is shelter. Now, we have instructed the people of the United States, or informed the people of the United States, that if they live a distance of 11 or 12 or more miles from any assumed aiming point, the best thing in the world they can do this very minute is to get busy and build in their backyard a shelter that will permit them to get 3 feet of dirt over their heads, because that shelter will give them complete protection against radioactivity, complete protection against the thermal effects of the fire, of the bomb, and it will give them a considerable amount of protection and very great protection, depending upon how much strength they want to put in the shelter, if they want to use concrete reinforced with steel. But if they'll do those things, do that right now, they'll have a peace of mind and protection that you can't get anywhere in the world simply by moving to someplace like Tahiti or Lhasa, Tibet. Now, the other thing that we have to do is to work out evacuation plans for all these great American cities. And I'd like to say, Congressman Hoffman, and I think you'll be interested in this, that every test that we've run in the United States so far, and we've run about 15 of them, indicates that evacuation will work. And I could relate the circumstances if we have time. And the only scientific study ever made in the history of the world, we made through FCDA in Milwaukee, using the best traffic engineering firm in America and one of the best traffic control firms, the Northwestern University Traffic Institute, and it showed that any evacuation is better than no evacuation, and it showed that it would take 7 hours to move 1,010,000 people to safety in metropolitan Milwaukee, but that in 2 hours in the daytime, you could move 600,000 to safety, and in 3 hours, you could move 800,000 to safety, and by building a few roads, in accordance with the request that the president made to the Congress some months ago, you'd be able to step up that the evacuation factor materially. Now, there are many things that we can do, and we have outlined them to the American people, and we're continuing
to outline them to the American people. Governor, we're not doing them. That's the thing that I'm kicking about. I agree with you that this plan that you have enunciated is a good plan, but it's not being put into effect in five out of the 94 critical target areas in the United States. And where it is being attempted, they're going at it in a piecemeal fashion. They're taking care of possibly of one political subdivision when there may be a half a dozen political subdivisions involved. Some of them are not coordinated. Some of them are not even cooperating. Some of them have no defense at all. And you're not going to have a real defense until you have a completely planned, coordinated defense within a target area.
All right, but you've got to give him a chance to do it. You can't expect it all in one bite, can you?
What you're kicking about isn't broad enough.
The planning isn't going fast enough. Well, all right, it's going altogether too fast in my judgment. For example, according to, I think it's Cecil Holland in the Post this morning, or the Star, one of those papers, he says or she says, whichever it is, that agriculture has now issued direction about production. As a matter of civilian defense, what are they going to do? They're going to grow potatoes. They're going to tell everybody you want them to get out and dig a hole in the yard so they can all crawl there in there when it comes. Now, wait a moment. Agriculture says
that it's going to take over production. What's it going to do, plow up the fields of grain that the farmers have planted and put in some other crop?
What we have asked agriculture to do, along with every other department of government, is to assume responsibility for the people following an attack. Now, what we want them to do is to be sure that foodstuffs have been located in adequate places that will be in existence following the attack so that we can feed the American people. Because this test the other day, which was not the biggest attack by any means that could have been posed on the United States, this attack, the most important factor in this test, the civil defense part of it, was that 25 million Americans would have been made homeless by this attack. Now, that means that we would have had to feed 25 million Americans, shelter 25 million Americans, medicate whatever number of them needed that medication, and we would have had a tremendous job on our hands.
Well, you couldn't have done it because you're not prepared to do it, and this is the thing that I'm kicking about. I agree with you that this is the casualty list that would have occurred had these bombs been dropped on even 28 of the main target centers. But we're not equipped to do the job of feeding, caring, sheltering, and medicating these people.
We sure have the surpluses.
And the reason why I want us to get on with the job is because I believe that it means the difference between survival and continuity of production in an atomic hydrogen type of war and the difference between us losing our national survival.
Well,
I've got three things that I think, if they were done, that we would get out of this helpless condition that we're in. I think the people ought to be educated as to what the effects of atomic hydrogen warfare is. I think the next thing, we should have federal planning and financing in target areas, not in villages and cities and counties, but in target areas, covering a whole target area. And the next thing, I think we would have to coordinate our civilian defense plans with our military defense plans. And if these three principles were adopted by the federal government and a vigorous program developed, then I say that we would take care of the American people. And until we do that, we are failing the American people. We're not giving them the chance of survival which they need.
Governor Peterson.
Congressman, I agree with you generally, and I'm glad to report to you that all three of the directions in which you indicate we should go are being pursued, and we're moving forward in all of them. Now, one thing that you can do to help me and help federal civil defense in the United States and civil defense generally in the United States is this. I go before the House Subcommittee on Appropriations on Wednesday to ask for, to plead for $12 million that the President has requested to permit us to make evacuation studies for approximately 100 of the leading American cities. Also to make a survey to determine what percentage of the people who are evacuated from these cities can be given protection against radioactive fallout in the basements of existing structures within 15 to 50 miles of these cities. That will permit us to find out what will be necessary in the way of the construction of public shelters for protection against radioactive fallout. And the third thing that this survey will permit us to make, and this request is now before the appropriate committee of the Congress, is to find out what we can do to shelter, to feed and shelter and take care of those people for a period of weeks or months until we can get them permanently located following a possible atomic attack.
Well, I pledge you my help on that, and anything I can do to help you, I'll be glad to do it.
With a few minutes left, gentlemen, we haven't yet discussed this big question of radiation and the so-called, we've heard it discussed as the U-bomb, which supposedly, I gather, is bigger than the H-bomb, if that's possible.
Well, before you get to that now, I have, let me tell you what my idea of civilian defense is.
All right.
Instead of moving the people out and putting on a show, and that's a wrong word to use, of course, and frightening them all the time, I would, through the press and over the radio and every means of communication possible, I would inform them as to the danger, just as you've outlined it here, if you wish, what to do, but not spending the government money or the people's time in trying, because I don't think you can do it effectively, to get all the people to put on a practice evacuation, to call it. Then another thing I would do, and I think this is the most important of all, I would step up our weapons for stopping these fellas before they got this far.
Now, those weapons are being stepped up, but there is no military authority yet that has appeared before our committee and testified that they can stop the Continental bombers from coming in. They can't stop them all, and if they only stop 5 or 10% of them, as was the attrition rate in World War II, then 80 to 90% get through, and that's too many. When you're dealing with bombs that can destroy everything within 30 or 40 square miles and put a radioactive dust cloud over an area from 20 miles wide to 140 miles long In other words, from 7,000 to 8,000 square miles, and this is exactly what these bombs can do, and I'm not talking about the biggest ones now. I'm talking about the one that has already been exploded.
Now, this question has arisen, too. The question of simulated martial law came into effect, and now for the question, of course, of civilian control and military control. I think it's timely that we should bring it up, Governor. We should mention it.
Well, I think so, but I want to go back to something that Congressman Hoffman said. I'd have to differ with him just a little bit. I think we're going to have to run test after test after test in the United States. We're going to practice and practice and practice in order that we may save the lives of millions of Americans if this attack comes. Now, if you don't practice these things, in spite of the fact that they're nuisances and then they interfere with the ordinary course of business, if you don't practice them, we're going to lose millions of people unnecessarily. The Army has learned one thing and learned it well. There may be some things that it hasn't learned, but it has learned that in teaching men to act properly under combat, you must run them through as realistic tests as you can over and over and over again. In other words, you adopt two principles that are sound pedagogically. One is practice and the other is repetition, and do it time after time.
I agree with you 100%, Governor, on that point.
Congressman Hoffman has said that, or at least implied that your tests this week weren't of any great value, Governor Peterson. Did you learn anything?
Oh, I don't know whether they're of value or not. All I'm arguing is that if they keep on with those tests of that nature, that they'll get the people accustomed to them. Just like that old cry of wolf, they won't pay any attention to you after a while.
Well, did you learn anything, Governor? Is it worthwhile or what? You mentioned this test must continue.
This test was run for three purposes. One was in the civil defense field, where I was responsible. Two of them were in the field of government governmental responsibility of Dr. Arthur Summerfield, or Dr. Arthur Fleming. One thing that he wanted to learn was how long would it take, and was it possible to get the people necessary to keep the government running, to keep continuity in government out into the area around Washington. That part of the test was very successful. The other was to have all of the elements of the executive branch of the government, all of the departments, understand
the
tremendous...
Congress.
Well, now we have been very happy to have the Congress, but under the separation of powers, we have no right to order the Congress, Congress
didn't
would
even
be...
ask us.
That I'm not so sure about, Congressman. I think Congress was asked.
Well, maybe you could at least ask them the next time, Governor Patrick.
I'd be very happy to extend an invitation to Congress.
Well, I'm going to stay right in the office while you're doing it.
Well, I must interrupt, gentlemen. I'm sorry our time is up. Our speakers have been, and we thank them very much, Congressman Chet Holifield, Democrat of California, Congressman Claire Hoffman, Republican of Michigan, and Val Peterson, Administrator of the Federal Civil Defense Administration.
That was the American Forum of the Air transcribed. Now stay with us as Monitor continues. Over many of these stations, you'll soon be hearing Monitor's final hour of the first 40 on a weekend, transcribed and direct. And there's a promise of lively dance tunes to refresh you wherever you are. And there's no need to be upset if you haven't seen television tonight, because before long, the one and only Henry Morgan will be dropping by to tell you what he saw on TV tonight. Just check in with Henry, and tomorrow you can sit in on any conversation about television and be the most informed man in town. And while you're making notes, make a note that beginning next Saturday morning, Monitor will return to report the nation and the world, to bring laughter and music. Bob and Ray, Clifton Fadiman, Dave Garraway, John Cameron Swayze, Morgan Beatty, Frank Blair, David Brinkley, Walter Kiernan and me, Don Russell, and Ben Grauer, Mel Brandt, Al Collins, and Miss Monitor, and all of the Monitor exclusives, the greatest sounds in radio. That's the story of Monitor. On the American Forum, which you've just heard, you heard Senator Chet Holifield, Democrat from California and joint member of the Joint Committee on Atomic Defense, Representative Claire Hoffman, Republican of Michigan and member of the House Education of Labor Committee, and Val Peterson, the Administrator of the Federal Civil Defense Administration. The moderator of the American Forum, Stephen McCormick. Much more coming up on the 40th hour of Monitor. Stay with us.
This is Monitor, the new NBC radio service.